Good morning and welcome to Share Talk. Today I have Justin Tooth from Ferran Crescent and Merlin, who is the geologist on the site in their newly acquired Terral project in Spain. So, Justin, how are you today?
Good morning, Stephen. Thank you. I'm very well.
How are you today, Merlin?
All good. Yeah, very good. Good to be talking to you.
Thank you. Same with you. Now, you acquired the project back in September and you announced a plan of action going forward. And today's release to the market shows what you're doing there, Justin. So would you like to touch on that?
Yes. The reality was, of course, that we'd taken an option back in at the end of the first quarter to buy these projects, and as part of the long, perhaps too long, process of due diligence and completion of the option, we were looking at the data, we were looking at the history, and we were of course planning an effective route forward. As part of that process, I was very happy that Merlin Marr Johnson, who is, as you say, a geologist, and based here actually in England, but speaks fluent Spanish, etc., knew the project extremely well, having previously been a consultant to one of the owners, and agreed to act as a consultant to us, and is now with us working to direct activity there. Merlin's going backwards and forwards to Spain. We have a Spanish team in place who have been connected to this project for many years and know it inside out. What the announcement today speaks to is the previous delineation of resource under previous studies and what that means under our own codes that are applicable to the Australian Stock Exchange, for we're an Australian company. And I'll let Merlin explain the work program and what the notice today means and the activity that is now going on site. So over to Merlin.
Right. Okay. Well, I think there are three key points to take away from this news release today. One is that, as Justin rightly says, by operating under the ASX rules, we haven't really been able to talk about the historic or the foreign resource that was delineated by previous owners, and that was a figure was put on it by the Canadian company under Canadian rules. We've now been able to bring it into the ASX rules, and so that we can now talk about it. So, yes, in some degrees, this is old news, but actually it's the first time that we can publicly say there was a historic resource. It was 8.8 million tons of ore, running at about 12% lead-zinc combined. And I don't want to get too carried away with it, but what this really shows us is that there's a relatively large geological system at work here, and that there has been enough drilling and analysis in the past to be able to put an envelope around that and say, yes, there is a resource here. Okay, it happens to be deep, it happens to be buried, and it isn't actually something that we're going to be looking to try and spruce up and turn this resource into an economic target. What we're really using it as a springboard for looking at zinc mineralization, which is much more accessible, because there has been no work through history between the buried resource and the surface high-grade mineralization that we can see. I say no work, I actually mean not a lot of work. So that's the key point. There is a historic resource at depth which shows us that we're in a big mineralizing system. Then I think another key point to remember is that since 2011, there's been precious little capital available for exploration. right across the industry, and in particular at Toral. So this project has been starved of cash, and whatever work has been done and the way that they've managed to use their funds has been very intelligent, but fundamentally it's been cash starved. And actually the internal infrastructure of an exploration camp of getting vehicles and geologists work on a regular basis and core sheds and mapping protocols, all of that was slightly fossilized. It had ossified and or rather fallen away. And so we weren't in a position to kickstart this until we exercised the option. So even though in some ways you might say, well, so what? Here you are in early November saying this is the work program, but you mentioned this in September. Fundamentally, the difference is that we've got the geological team up and running. We've got the field assistants, we've got the vehicles, we've got the GPSs, you know, activities happening on the ground, we're mapping, sampling. It's all at low cost, but to get that kind of internal infrastructure of an organization is real progress. So that's another key point. And I think the if one looks at the bullet points on the front section of the RNS today, a lot of this work program that we said that we were going to be doing is to a degree a repetition of what we said we were going to be doing in September. It's just that actually now we are doing it. But there's also a little bit more information. If you look at the last bullet point, we mentioned that the drill plan design will test a number of cross-cutting and intersecting fault zones. And we're looking for structural repetition and multiple sub-parallel zones of mineralization. And this is absolutely critical because the old drilling that was done at depth to define that resource was not directly underneath the high-grade mineralization that we see at surface. It was 200 or 300 meters translated to one side. And we also believe that the old drilling missed repetition. We believe it missed cross-cutting features. You can see that in the geochemical maps that are included in the RNS, that we think there are lots of zones that need lots of styles of mineralization that need checking out. There are multiple targets that need testing. We're not simply just trying to build out on the single planar buried resource that was defined in antiquity.
Yes.
So
had a look at those diagrams, it almost looks like they've done the sort of NI 43-101 report based on one sort of structure subsurface, and looking at the reports that are there on this RNS, it looks almost like there are sort of three zones running side by side. So is that the sort of workover plan that you're looking to do, interpret
yes.
what they are?
Yes, very, very much so. And if you look at the zinc, the map of the zinc soil geochemistry anomaly, you can see that there are cross-cutting lines and anomalies way out to the northeast of the main zone. And we believe there's structural complexity in there, and that there are a whole range of targets and mineralizing styles that we'll be looking at. And you're absolutely correct in saying that the 43-101, which was done in 2011, was based on old drilling corroborated by the Lundin drilling. But in a sense, what Lundin did was they just drilled as deep as the very historic drilling and said, yes, it's true, there is mineralization down there. But they didn't actually test a new hypothesis or much of the shallower material. So it's a very, very underexplored area with lots of zinc mineralization in the system.
Now, Justin, going back obviously to the right to acquire and the background work that you've done with the sort of mining area, did you actually have a look at all of the historic data and then bring in sort of expertise from other areas to sort of upgrade that and collaborate sort of information?
Very much so. Pretty much the first port of call was the publicly available historic geological information. I'm not a geologist, so I turned to Merlin, who knew this particular deposit very well, to explain this theory, this working theory of ours, that there is a great deal of mineralization that is more economic than that was previously disclosed in the MICON report. So it's important to understand that this disclosure and representation today is a kind of baseline case, as Merlin's just explained. But we are excited by what we think is a very strong possibility of mineralization that is more economic, is closer to the surface, and happens to lie in a shape which we believe is one of the best shapes that you can mine, particularly on a hill like ours, which has historic adits in it, etc.
In reference to the mineralization in the area, Merlin's obviously been on the ground for a while. What sort of other mines are there in the area?
There's an extension, if you like, to our mineralization just across a valley called Antonina, and that was mined at one point, but then fell into abeyance. And then there's the very large Rubiales mine, which is in geological terms just up the road. And then, of course, we have another deposit, the Largo deposit, that we're excited about. It's a different shape, different style of mineralization, but we have reason to believe that we can make some interesting inroads there. But the whole area is heavily mineralized and has been mined for centuries, indeed, going back to the Roman period and before that as well. So this is mining country.
In relation to zinc then, obviously previous conversations with yourself, you're very happy with the zinc and the zinc price. In certain presentations that are available now, it shows that there's a growing demand and a sort of mid to long term supply problem for the markets that utilize your product. Where do you fit in with that area?
I'm completely on board with that thesis, and it was a very good call in effect that Ferrum Crescent made as a board back at the start of the year to go to zinc, to look for zinc and to find this particular one. That is where the upside that is the basis of the upside is in the mineral and then in the mine. We think that the recent closures by Glencore and others of mine production mean that there is going to be a supply shortfall because demand is actually picking up and is growing. There are reasons to believe that the type of zinc and the type of zinc mines in China are not the answer to their growing demand either. We're very excited about it, and I am absolutely I am confident that the zinc price will move up towards the 4,000 mark in time.
And would you agree also that the same issue exists for the tin that's in place?
We've got other minerals in place, but mainly lead and some silver, etc. But our economics and our motivating forces is about the zinc. The other minerals that we have will serve to make our zinc cheaper to mine. Let's put it that way.
Now, in respect to the project, you've obviously said it's on a hill. Where do you stand in relation to the infrastructure on the area? How are you going to potentially move the project forward?
I'm going to let Merlin, as the project overseer, to describe that.
Sure. The infrastructure is excellent. There's a railway line that runs at the base of the hill. There's a river there's a very good road and several power lines that cross the property, including a local substation, so we can access the right amount, the right voltage power when it comes to it. It's a mining area which has got low unemployment, but there are local manufacturers of machinery. There are drill rigs available. There are yellow goods around. There are yards with equipment. So in every sense, there are there's the kind of the infrastructure that was what that one requires. There's the equipment, there's the human resources, and the physical infrastructure of power, rail, water, road. When it comes to actual development, there are the most likely route will be to operate an underground mine, accessing this through adits in from the side of the hill. Because the topography is such, we don't have to sink a shaft, we can just go in on a decline. So the obviously I don't want to preempt what we might find, because geology is full of surprises, but the main structure of the hill, where we believe the main mineralizing zone is a sub-vertical plane going away from the valley. It would indicate that an underground mine accessed through an adit and a decline is the way forward. So in short, it's about as low impact mining as you could have anywhere, as well as from the position around, and also the government legislation that one could hope for. It is in Europe, and all European projects need to have well-established environmental plans and permits. So baseline studies and taking that very carefully is, of course, the way forward. But I repeat that there are quarries and mines in the region, so it's not as if we're in a no mining zone. We're very much in a mining zone, and you've just got to work through that process as one advances the project.
And I think it's worth speaking also to the smelter situation, Mala.
Yes, absolutely. Glencore owns one of the largest smelters in the world, which is called Asturianas de Zinc, and it's about 180 k's away, accessible by rail and by road. And as I said, we've got a rail link at the bottom of the hill. So that smelter is currently bringing in concentrate from China, amongst from other places. The Irish mines, which have been supplying zinc concentrate to that smelter, well, Lisheen in particular, that's closed down. That was 180,000 ton per annum mine. So there's only one Irish mine producing at the moment, and a lot of that goes to the Outokumpu facility in Sweden. So the Spanish smelter is hungry for concentrate, which is very good for us.
That sounds all very promising, and you're forward-looking, which is very prudent. Is there anything you would like to say to the listeners in relation to what the next sort of news flow is that's expected?
Yes, I would say to the listeners that we've been through a period of massive change. We are now, I think, establishing with today's announcement that we are a mining exploration company with a very good project and a very good mineral, with a very good team. I don't think our valuation reflects that at this time. And please look forward to more news in the future. And thank you for your interest, Stephen.
Not a problem, Justin. Merlin, would you like to touch on anything further?
I think Justin's covered it off rather nicely.
Thanks, right. Chaps.
Thank you very much for your time, Merlin. Thank you very much for your time, Justin.
Bye. Not at all. Good talking to you. Bye.